You'll have to forgive us if you're eating breakfast while you listen to us, because sometimes exploring and understanding the world of science requires us to move just a bit beyond our comfort zones. So we're leaving the living room and heading for the bathroom. Not our bathrooms, but the places in nature where raccoons relieve themselves. Here's why it's worthy of study. It's well known that animals avoid the places where larger creatures that can eat them hang out. Do they also avoid places where parasites that can weaken and kill them hang out? That was the question before a team led by Sarah Weinstein, now a postdoctoral research associate at the University of Utah Department of Biology, but the work was done while she was posted at UC Santa Barbara, and she's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Good to have you here today. Your work deals a lot about parasites, I noticed. Tell us about the fascination there.
Parasites in general?
Yes.
I've always sort of been interested in infectious agents, and as a kid, everybody sort of said, "Oh, you're gonna go become a medical doctor." And it turns out I'm much more interested in the parasites really than necessarily curing diseases. And I've always been interested in understanding how parasites are part of ecosystems. And when I got to college, started working in research labs, realized I could look at these questions. I didn't have to become a medical doctor. I could become a parasitologist and a disease ecologist, and it is now, years later, I guess that's what I do.
So raccoons are the key animal here, and wow, I mean, what kinds of parasites do they have, and what levels?
Oh, raccoons have all sorts of parasites, and really all wild animals have parasites. So raccoons have of a variety of different things, from viral and bacterial organisms to really big helminths, worms. And the worm I studied most closely was the raccoon roundworm, which is a giant nematode. It gets to be roughly the size of sort of your average unsharpened number two pencil. And this large worm lives in their intestine. And actually, in raccoons, doesn't cause that much damage. But in other animals, infection with this roundworm could be deadly. And so that's what I've been working on for the last couple of years.
So when raccoons poop, then, we have to assume they leave a pretty good collection of roundworm parts and eggs and things like that?
Yeah. They're releasing thousands and millions of these microscopic parasite eggs. These roundworms are pretty much egg-producing machines, and these eggs pass out into the environment with the raccoon feces, and as you're talking about as latrines, those communal raccoon bathrooms, those sites are really hot spots of these parasite eggs. They're filled with them.
So then how did you decide to approach the research that's represented in this paper? And I should point out the paper is called Fear of Feces? Trade-offs between disease risk and foraging drive animal activity around raccoon latrines. That's published in the January 18th issue of Oikos, a journal of ecology. What then set up the framework for this research?
Well, we know that, you know, the world is full of parasites, and some of these parasites, like raccoon roundworm, can cause really severe, even fatal disease. And these eggs are concentrated at latrines, and if animals can detect and avoid these sites much the same way they might be able to detect and avoid places where predators are, they should be able to reduce their risk of coming in contact with a parasite that, once ingested, can hatch, migrate out of their gut, and actually make its way to their brain and cause really severe disease. So we wanted to see if animals can alter their behavior around these latrine sites. And to do that, went out and looked for raccoon latrines and then put sites to see what animals did when we weren't around.
We were talking to Sarah Weinstein at the University of Utah about her research into raccoon latrines and what animals will do when they encounter potentially parasite-laden places that also look like halfway decent forage. We'll get further into the food versus, discussion as we go along. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation on the exchange. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Sarah, I'm intrigued by the term ecology of fear. Can you give us a little sense of what that means?
Well, we've known for a long time that animal populations, you know, prey might be controlled by their predators because the predators can eat them, and that reduces the number. So if the mountain lions are eating deer, we have fewer deer because mountain lions have eaten them. But if mountain lions scare the deer, we might end up with fewer deer because they're spending so much time avoiding the mountain lions that they don't have time to make more deer. So this ecology of fear is the idea that predators can influence their prey, not just by eating them, but actually by changing their behavior. And this can have sort of cascading effects on their populations and even the ecosystem at large. You know, if the deer are eating less vegetation, you know, the trees might grow taller, the ecosystem might support other animals that wouldn't be there if the predators weren't there. So it's much more complex than just animals being eaten. There's also this component about animals being afraid of their predators. So that's sort of the ecology of fear in a nutshell.
Which I think corresponds to what we've been hearing about in Yellowstone in recent years. As more wolves have come in, the elk don't hang around by the streams as much, and the willows have grown back.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the template for that.
So an environment itself will be changed by animal behaviors, like hiding from the creatures that can harm you. So is the question here then, if they were afraid enough of raccoon poop to avoid it, knowing that there might be, or at least sensing on some level that there was a danger there from the parasites?
Yeah, so we wanted to extend this idea to parasites, which we know can also harm animals. And of course, animals are going to hide from parasites in quite the same way they would from predators. But avoiding predators could certainly lead to changes in behavior, like how active they are around sites where parasite risk is high.
There's one part of this that really jumped out, and it was the sentence that says, landscapes contain parasite biomass that rivals predator biomass. That's a lot of parasite.
It is. Now, parasites might be small, and sort of normally we don't see them in the landscape, but cumulatively, you know, almost all animals are infected, and these small parasites can really add up to being quite substantial.
All right, so let's move on to where you actually studied this. Raccoon latrines signifies that raccoons sort of share a place. Is it sort of like dogs? If one went there, the others will go there too?
Mm-hmm. And not only that, the same individual will come back again and again to this same site, the same latrine. So you can actually end up with sort of large piles of raccoon feces that accumulate for years and years. There are some sites we know about that have been probably going for over 10 years.
Wow, that is an old latrine. All right, so now apologies to the people eating breakfast, but other animals can dine on the stuff left behind in a raccoon latrine?
Yeah, so these sites, they are concentrated parasite eggs, but they're also concentrating all this material that raccoons are eating and not digesting. So, yeah, I guess apologies to people still eating breakfast. But raccoons are omnivores, so they're eating whatever is available. So they might be eating fruit, other plant matter, seeds, and things that don't get digested end up concentrated in these latrines. So for an animal that's granivorous or specializes in eating seeds, these latrines might actually be pretty attractive as a place to find this food.
So once you found the latrines, and I imagine they're fairly easy to find from what you were saying.
Yep, they are. I mean, you have to look, but once you know what to look for, they're pretty easy to find.
And then once you'd located a latrine, what did you do to observe other animals and how they interacted or not with them?
So we couldn't just stand there and watch the animals,
right,
because we'd scare them away, but we can put out cameras, wildlife cameras, which are activated by sort of an animal moving in front of them, and then they capture a series of pictures. And so we can do that, and then we go back and look at the pictures and see which animals are moving through there, figure out which species they are, and actually what they're doing when they move through this area. Are they sitting there eating the material? Do they run through really quickly? We can go through and get all that information just from photographs.
Oh, so you don't have to hang out there for one thing. Let's go all the way there. I mean, how pleasant or not is it to actually encounter a raccoon latrine for the human senses?
You know, they're remarkably not as gross as you would expect. They actually don't really smell we seem to ask, like, how bad do they smell? And they really don't. They tend to dry out pretty quickly. So
not terrible. Okay. Sarah Weinstein's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's a postdoctoral research associate at the University of Utah. She did a lot of the work that we're talking about here, all the work we're talking about here, while she was at the University of California, Santa Barbara. We're talking about raccoon poopy piles and how other animals interact with them and whether they avoid them because they contain parasites. Join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Peter in Ashland left a question off by phone. Wanted to know about dogs potentially eating raccoon poop and whether they could end up with roundworms as a result or any parasites.
Yeah, so dogs are actually a really interesting animal for this particular question, because dogs are fairly closely related to raccoons. They're both in the same sort of dog-like carnivore group. And although this raccoon roundworm can't develop to its adult stage in, say, us or a bird or a mouse, in a dog, it's close enough to a raccoon that actually some of these worms can develop to adults. So dogs eating raccoon poop is both a health risk for the dog and actually a potential health risk for the owner, because these worms can mature, and actually a dog infected with raccoon roundworm can actually produce raccoon roundworm eggs. And unlike raccoons, which use their latrines, dogs are what we call indiscriminate defecators, meaning actually the risk of contacting it is potentially higher depending on where the dog is relieving itself. So dogs can pick up this parasite. Fortunately, the routine deworming medication, the same medication the vet would give to treat dog roundworms, actually also treats this parasite. So regular deworming is very effective.
All right. Controlling that'll give a few people a little more ease than they might have had a few moments ago. So Sarah, when you set up the cameras and got all the pictures of the animals visiting the raccoon latrines, did you have some predictions on which ones would come close and which ones might avoid?
Yeah. So we know that these latrines are full of parasites, but they're also full of these undigested seeds and plant material. So expect animals to have to make a choice between kind of easy food and high parasite risk. And based off that, expect the animals that don't want to eat anything in there and are really high risk should be most likely to avoid them, whereas animals that, you know, aren't going to develop severe disease and have a lot to gain from eating that, really like seeds, might be the ones most likely to visit. Those are sort of the predictions we started out with.
And then what? How do the predictions compare with what you just saw on the cameras?
Generally, that's actually what we saw. For example, rats were actually remarkably tolerant of this parasite. They don't get very sick from it, are significantly attracted to these latrines, and they spend a lot of time foraging in there, kind of getting an easy meal from that pile of raccoon poo. Whereas animals like rabbits that are herbivorous, they eat plants, not seeds, and are at really high risk of disease, avoid these sites.
And could you make much of a determination about whether it was just it's not the kind of stuff for them, or whether that was, you know, real, you know, an avoidance kind of behavior?
Yeah, so when we set up the cameras, we put a camera monitoring the latrine, but we also paired every sort of poop camera with a second non-latrine camera that was matched. So looking at something really similar, you know, if the latrine was on a log, we placed the second camera on a similar-looking log, so we could compare animal activity at both sort of the high-risk, high-food site and the control site to compare and actually detect whether animals are changing their activity. And so based off that, we were able to say that, oh, we see three times more rabbits in places where there aren't these sites compared to places where there are.
All right, so they're really not going to hang around with the raccoon latrines. Any idea what the mechanisms might be for avoidance, whether it's a smell thing or something else, that, or it's just not their food or anything like that?
Oh, that's a really good question. So the animals probably aren't detecting the parasite eggs themselves. They're microscopic. They don't really have a scent. They're tiny. But they're likely queuing in on
other cues. And we know that animals can frequently detect feces, pretty strong scent cues, and maybe also visual as well. And so in other systems, people have shown that, for example, sheep, they can't actually detect the parasite larvae or eggs that might be in feces, but they will avoid feces just in general because of the cues in that, the smells. We suspect that's what's occurring here as well.
So what lessons can you draw from the research? I mean, this is a fair amount of time to spend around raccoon latrines, and you have some things to show for it.
Yeah, I guess one of the big take-homes for us is that how animals interact with these risky sites is sort of really all about trade-offs between disease risk and also food value. Sort of much the same way like we might selectively apply the five-second rule to, you know, chocolate on the kitchen floor, but broccoli in the bathroom.
All right, so it really depends on what it is that fell on the floor and in which room it fell on the floor.
Yeah, we have parasite avoidance strategies too. A lot of this behavior, disgust behavior, is actually in humans thought to be sort of a way to avoid infection risk and parasites. And although we can't really attribute human emotions to animals, we actually may be seeing a lot of the same or similar behavior. Animals have evolved ways to avoid parasites, but there's a cost in that. You know, they're giving up the chance to feed on something, and so they're only going to do these behaviors when it's worth it.
Well, some fascinating stuff in here, and anybody can read this online at Oikos, which is a journal of ecology, OIKOS, the January 18th issue. The research is titled Fear of Feces, Trade-Offs Between Disease Risk and Foraging Drive, Animal Activity Around Raccoon Latrines. Four authors, Sarah Weinstein at the University of Utah, the lead author, while she's at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today in The Exchange.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
All right, take care.